All right, what's up, everybody? We're back again. This is Jim Hunt, some kind of podcast about horror movies or whatever. It can be whatever you want it to be, I guess. I'm a bit scattered tonight. I don't know what's happening. How are you guys?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Oh, fabulous. We have a fabulous.
Oh, good. We're working with new mics tonight. Well, at least a couple new mics. So, you know, we upped our budget by about, $115.
Nice. Ballin'.
Money yeah. bags.
Actually, it was zero for me because I used a gift card. I used my coupon that I had. For
somebody
the music
had a
store.
Birthday.
Anyways, we're here. We're gem hunting. We're hunting for a gem. I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see. I didn't prepare shit tonight, so I am going to be weird.
Yeah, I'm Beth, and it is the evening of the day. That's a rip, Marianne Faithful.
Oh, yeah. Good one.
Thank you.
I'm Buggy, and I'm Bram Stoker.
Whoa, she contains some multitudes.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm Cody, and I went to a dirty gas station, and Willem Dafoe installed my bioport.
Oh, yeah. Portman.
Yeah.
Portmanteau.
Shot it into me with a weird, dirty gun, and I am a Cronenberg experiment.
Truly.
Yeah. I don't know. What's going on tonight? Has anybody got anything they want to talk about before we dive into this goddamn movie that we're reviewing?
Well, I have one thing, which is like, okay, so it's sort of supernatural, and it also relates back to my intro, which is last night I've had this picture of Marianne Faithful, that really cool one, like in motorcycle leathers. I've had it since I was probably 20. I think I bought it in Dallas when I was like 19, and I was going through my art supplies and I found it last night, and I was like, oh fuck, I have a frame, this will fit. So I framed a portrait of Marianne Faithful, and then she died.
You are a murderer.
It's your fault.
Supernatural murderers.
I've had a lot of suggestions from people of who I should frame, but I don't want them in my house. So we were talking about like burying them and then like peeing and pooping on them.
That's like you
murder.
Don't have to pee and poop on them though.
You could though if you wanted to. Anyway, that's what I have to say.
Yeah.
Dog under a microphone. He limbo.
He did limbo. I don't like have any like breaking amazing news, but I watched Cannibal the Musical last night.
Hmm.
And for the first time?
Yeah, for the first time.
Oh.
And I didn't like it.
Fair enough.
The music wasn't good. That's my only thought.
I don't like any musicals because, in my opinion, the music is bad in all of them.
You like Phantom of the Paradise?
That doesn't count. That's more of a rock opera than a musical, I would say.
Who's the guy who's in that? The, like, one?
Paul.
Is it Williams?
Paul, fuck.
Rudd.
No, it's a real normal name, though.
It's
it
like
is.
Paul
it's
Williams
like Paul Williams. Yeah, it might be Paul Williams. I'm going to get in trouble.
Chud.
Might be Paul Chud.
There it is.
Yeah.
I think it's like, yeah, Paul Williams.
I think it is Paul Williams.
I don't know who anybody is. Okay, so we were mentioning last week that we've been on kind of a 90s tear, not including our diversion to do our Adult Swim infomercials, but we did Body Melt. We did Mirror Mirror, and tonight we're pushing up right against the end of the 90s for a little movie called Colobus. Everybody ready to do some Colobus?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of us are ready for Colobus. I'm
Ooh,
sorry.
Boy. What does it mean? Maybe we'll find out what Colobus means. So this was released in 1999, directed by Daniel Liatowicz. And David Todd Ockvark. Do you think that sounds right?
I think that's probably right. I don't know what else.
That seems right.
It was also written by those two and Nay Abong, and they all together kind of were involved with the production, as well as some other random guy that is kind of a mystery. This is starring A.B. Weber as Kira, Donnie Terranova as Tom, Nicole Pellerin as Erica, Promise LaMarco as Tina, John Fairley as Gary, Ilya Volokh as the faceless villain, and we get a cameo from Linnea Quigley as Dorothy, and you know her from all sorts of things like Return of the Living Dead, Silent Night, Deadly Night, Night of the Demons, Tourist Trap, a little movie called Fatal Games.
Okay.
Do you remember that one? That was a buggy pick from way back. That was episode 2, I think.
It got Javelin too. You all snubbed it.
No, did we? Well.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
I think it was just me.
No, it was both of you.
I snubbed it.
No, okay. Double
there's
snub.
There's only so much love I can give to an anti-trans slasher. But
yeah, it was a little rough on the messaging.
Wow, way to make me look like a piece of shit.
Hey, you're in line with the times.
It was a fun movie to watch regardless.
Yeah.
Let's see. The music and composer by William Kidd, a little Billy the Kid here with the music. We'll talk about him and the music in this movie a little bit later. Cinematography by someone named Yoram Astrakhan. The cinematography was quite interesting. We'll talk about that a bit later as well. The special effects were good. I didn't make a note of who was in charge of that, but they did a great job. So great job, special effects guy.
Woo-hoo. It was a small budget, small crew.
Yeah, small budget.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where can you watch this goddamn sumbitch? It's on Tubi. You can rent it on Fandor, Screambox, Arrow, Amazon Prime, Apple TV, or rent a DVD or Blu-ray from your local video store. Or if you're really cool, track down one of them original VHS tapes. This came out in the era where they still set up the VHS tapes at Hollywood Video.
Mm.
So you could find one of them and
wait,
be real cool.
I don't mean to interrupt, but Arrow has its own streaming service?
Arrow does have its own streaming service.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. They put out a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think I had a subscription for a brief moment, and it was seemed like it was pretty cool. But
yeah.
There's just so many options these days. I can't afford to do them all.
No, I know you can't. I didn't
can't
know
afford
that.
I can't afford subscriptions and drugs simultaneously.
And copays.
Gotta pick one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So let's get into a recap. What is this movie about? What are we about to review? This film opens with a theme song that is such a blatant homage to Suspiria that I'm surprised the filmmakers didn't release a cease and desist order. Or, maybe Claudio Cimenti and the Goblin Dudes. They should have maybe like got involved in some legal action. Mm-hmm. But I think there could be meaning there, but we'll get back to that. So the theme song accompanies a series of drawings juxtaposed with the setup of some camera equipment. And I think it's pretty obvious that the cameras being set up are surveillance style cameras. And then we also get a shot of some classic giallo black gloves in the intro there. So we're kind of getting a sense of maybe what we're getting into. We cut to a point of view shot in an alley. We see a bloody hand and some shots of a drain pipe for some reason. But it is kind of spooky. And then bam, a car hits the person whose point of view we're seeing through. And this is when we learn that the point of view is from a woman who was already severely injured before she was even hit by the car. Specifically, she had some pretty intense knife wounds to her face, I would say, or something like that. Could have been a razor, could have been a knife. We don't know for sure. We cut to some ominous surgeons. And a woman covered in bandages in the hospital, presumably the woman that was hit by the car. She's got a roommate in the hospital there, and she's behind a curtain, which is also a shot very reminiscent of Suspiria. The doctors are trying to figure out who this bandaged woman is, what in the Sam Hell happened to her, and what is going on in general. It's all very confusing at this point. And then through a clever transition from the bandaged woman's roommate reading a wanted ad in the newspaper for some kind of experimental film being shot.
Wanted freeloaders. Artists seek
five progressive-minded individuals for groundbreaking experimental film. Participants will share free lodging in a fully furnished home in the snowy Mount Olympus Resort. If you're willing to laugh, cry, love, hate, befriend, betray, and confess it all on VHS, I want you.
We get an introduction to a series of characters who are interviewing for a spot on this experimental video show, which is clearly inspired by the MTV's Real World, or maybe Big Brother, or one of those original reality television shows from the 90s, which is when they started, believe it or not. So the characters that we're going to be following are as follows. Erica, a very serious actress who comes across as a bit full of herself, I would say, maybe.
So this house,
What exactly is the setup? Are there cameras everywhere? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm totally comfortable with nudity. It's just that in my transition to serious film work, I think it's important that directors look beyond my physical attributes.
She's a bitch.
That's right. Yeah, mm-hmm. A batch.
She's a batch.
She's a batch.
We got Tom, a kind of pathetic womanizing comic. You know, you got to have one of them.
Office parties. Oh, man. You know, you got it. You got to love it. Especially around Christmas. It only takes one line to get the secretary in a sack. Baby, I'm not Rudolph. And no, that's not my nose.
We got Tina, an extremely 90s looking young woman who works at a fast food joint and pisses in people's beverages.
The camera shy need not apply. Interested? Ah, fuck yeah, I'm interested. Oh, shit. Can I say that on TV? Hold up a minute, buddy. I'm trying to do an interview here. Anyway, dude, listen, I would be great for your movie. I'm not some kind of actress or anything like that. But I got that progressive-minded shit down.
We got Gary, who's an academic kind of normal guy, but he's also really into film and cinema. So he's kind of like your normal nerd.
You think that guy's normal?
He's a douche.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's like...
he's more normal maybe than...
He's more normal than the rest of
them.
Yeah.
The ironic part of this whole thing is that I actually owe this realization to one of my classes. A history of Western cinema. God, you know, it was such a revelation. I mean... Yes, I appreciate car chases and explosions as much as the next guy. But now I see what artists like you see. The poetry and the beauty of everyday existence.
And then finally, we have Kira, a shy artist with some potential mental issues.
Hi, I'm Kira. Kira Mitchell. Right, okay. I enjoy reading and music. I like music, too. And I'm an artist, not a real one. I just like to draw for myself. Wait, I didn't mean to show that. Stop the camera, Dorothy.
It's all right, Kira.
No, they're going to think I'm some kind of a freak. Stop the camera.
So Tina picks Kira up from a halfway house, which is where we also run into Linnea Quigley for her brief cameo. And Tina picks up Kira. They drive up to the luxurious resort that they're going to be filming this, which actually looks kind of more like your standard aunt and uncle's house. And they kind of meet everyone and commence filming this reality television program. However, before they even enter the house, Kira sees a bizarre faceless man in an upstairs window. And by this point in the film, I believe we've already learned that Kira might be a cutter.
Oh, yeah, some of the there might be some
self-abuse going on. So the characters start getting to know each other. We begin to get a sense of their personalities, especially Kira, who we find out has a portfolio of very creepy artwork with her. So there's one red herring. We meet the show's director briefly, who is working in a control room in a trailer outside the house. And then the gang eats some pizza. So Erica, the actress, forces the roommates to watch an entire series of cheesy slasher films on VHS called The Slaughterhouse Factor, in which she stars as a female killer. So,
Oh, yeah.
Potentially another red herring. Meanwhile, Tom, the comedian, is critiquing the generic quality of these films and referring to them as a Friday the 13th ripoff. So there's a little bit of tension between the anti-woke comic and the self-obsessed actress at the beginning of this.
Somebody want something to drink?
Yeah, I'll take a soda if there's any left.
How about a nice big cup of espresso? These crappy films are putting me to sleep.
How about a nice big cup of shut the fuck up?
Then suddenly, we get an unexpected death by way of some elaborate trap set up in the kitchen. And from here on out, the shit really starts to hit the fan as the house goes into lockdown and our cast desperately tries to find a way to escape while being subjected to a number of torturous traps set throughout the house. The film unfolds like a whodunit mystery, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of Argento-esque lighting, proto-Saw-type traps, which unleash plenty of gore, And all the while, Kira is haunted by visions of faceless people and footage on TV of a man cutting his own face off, who on multiple occasions mumbles something about Colobus. As the characters are subjected to one creative and complex death after another while trying to escape, we, the viewers, are tasked with figuring out who is responsible for all the carnage and what the fuck Kira's deal is. The film takes an interesting turn in the last 15 to 20 minutes, ramping up the dreamlike Italian horror inspiration, and finally delivering an ending that will likely leave you wondering what the fuck just happened. So that's that, Mattress Man. I deliberately tried to avoid saying who all gets killed, when, how, because I don't want to spoil the mystery. It is really kind of one of those things where you're wondering who's doing all of this, and I feel like if we spoil too much of that along the way, that might ruin the mystery for anyone that's watching this for the first time.
Yeah, it's got a little like Agatha Christie to it, like a little Murder on the Orient Express, or
And Then There Were None.
For sure.
Yep. Okay. So one of the things about this, I have seen this before. This is a rewatch for me, but it's been a long time and I didn't remember anything about it really. So I was excited to watch it again because I had it on my list of things that I liked and wanted to rewatch. I picked up the Blu-ray at Movie Madness and the first thing that caught my eye was the first line on the back of the Blu-ray release, which is this movie is kind of like The Real World meets Saw by way of Suspiria, which I was like, that's interesting. I don't remember it that way. And the reason I don't remember it that way is because I was mixing it up in my mind with a movie called My Little Eye, which came out in 2002. And it has a very similar premise, but it's kind of all surveillance camera, found footage style. And so in my mind, this movie was like that. But this movie is very much not like that. Now, there is surveillance camera footage in the movie because it's a sort of reality TV show spoof type of deal, but it really is filmed more like a classic slasher film, I would say. Okay, what do you guys want to talk about first? Because I feel like there's a lot of things we can delve into about this movie.
Wait, really quick, Diva, did you say where people can watch the movie?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he sure did.
I just zoned out then. Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Blacked out.
She was blacked out.
I blacked out.
As one does.
Well, I have a lot of things to say, but I want to start with one that's totally off the wall, which is 1999, the heyday of the Wonder Bra.
Oh.
Did you notice this?
Was it like, what about the, like
their
triangle
tits are up to their fucking necks. Did you notice that?
I did not notice that.
Well, you
I think
wouldn't.
You're too hyper fixated on tits.
No, I just, it was something I was
true.
Like, no, that I am.
Well, Erica had like Madonna tits.
But they were all like, the way, I'm like pantomiming it right now. The way everyone walked was like, I'm leading.
Kira was not walking like,
yes,
here are
she
my
was.
Tits.
You go back and you watch it because it's a certain era of this bra that was. The Wonder Bra was like this advancement in technology and every girl had to have one. And
did you have one?
Yes, I had two. And it was like you lift your tits up to your fucking neck.
I had
so one. That's my off the wall thing to say is that it is really funny. The style and the just being someone that was alive in that era, how much I was like, fuck, they're all wearing a Wonder Bra. Or Victoria's Secret had a virgin. Nope.
Virgin.
Victoria's Virgin
the bombshell.
Had a secret. No, they
the
put out their own
bra.
Version of it, but it, is that what it is? But it is really this thing where it's like a contraption and it just takes what you have and lifts it to your neck.
I really did not. Like, I feel like
I
if anything, Kira was giving like
no,
sad,
was,
depressed.
And he's making fun of me
boom.
Now, but he know when I said it, he was like, yes. Because she's skinny as shit, but she's got her tits up to her
girl,
neck.
Girl, I feel like she's not even wearing a bra in that film.
Oh, come on.
I'm like, I want to pull up footage now. I'm like, I don't think
this is like something we like listener feedback on, actually. Like, write in, you know, yes,
please
no,
comment.
Maybe so.
If
will you go out with me?
Fixated on their tits.
Yeah.
No, not fixated.
Hit us up on Dirt Dog Cinema if you looked at tits.
It's a marker of the times, is what I'm saying. It's a very 1999 look.
It is very 90s. Yes. The look is 90s.
To have them up there. But that is my really aside thing. I mean, I have all kinds of things to say. Does somebody else want to have something more like relevant next before I go on all my weird shit?
Well, let's dive right into, I think, the biggest topic that came out of this, which is the Argento homage. Rip. Yeah, because the filmmakers talked about it. It's what they were trying to do. And I think the time and place of this makes it an interesting discussion. So, yeah, let's get into some Italian horror Argento stuff. Okay, so as I mentioned up top, the opening theme song is a complete Suspiria theme rip, which is amazing. And I think we can't do it justice without putting a little side-by-side comparison right here, just so you can hear how much of a rip it is.
It's outrageous. I mean, just the look. I was shocked that they could get away with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just felt like it was so, it was a cover song.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy.
There he is. He's really outraged about it. It's not outraging, though.
But yeah, so the theme song is not the only homage to Argento or Italian horror cinema. So I know you did a little bit of research, so I thought it would be fun to just kind of talk through some of the elements of this film that are clearly inspired by, oh my God,
we got animals, cats and dogs loving each other.
Our dog just almost took our cat out.
Well, she had
God
it coming.
Dang it.
So yeah, homage, it's a word that gets thrown around. But so yeah, we listen to it, shut the fuck up. Anyway.
I'm not even looking at
it. Is it the hat?
No, homage. It's a word.
No. But like sometimes people say homage when they're ripping. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, it was an homage to. Everyone's laughing at me. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. No. Okay. So it's this movie. It was like, how can you just use the same song and then yeah, the black gloves, the stuff. But then doing deeper reading on it. 1999, right? It came out in 1999. In 1999, we didn't have the kind of internet we have now. We did not have streaming. So like in order to watch Italian horror movies or giallo films, you had to like seek them out.
Or somebody had to tell you about
Somebody had to tell you about them. So when these guys made this movie, a lot of people had never seen Suspiria. And I was trying to think back. I saw it in high school, probably, because we fucking rented it from, I don't even know, Blockbuster, probably.
Albert, I'll kill you.
Or, you know, somebody had a copy. But it was different. And what all the filmmakers said in interviews and on the extras on the Blu-ray that we rented was like, they were trying to actually like bring that stuff into the light because it was not well seen. So thinking about it that way, it makes you feel kind of like warm and fuzzy about it instead of like, how the fuck did you think? Because they didn't know that there was going to be internet streaming platforms, these movies playing at theaters all the time. Like, yeah. I don't think I saw Suspiria in the theater till like 7 or 8 years ago. Like it, you know, I'd seen it, but it wasn't like screening somewhere.
Yeah,
anyway,
this movie did not come out in theaters. It went straight to VHS tape. Mm-hmm. And I think DVDs existed at
DVD,
the time.
No, it was straight to DVD, I think.
Yeah, but there were VHS tapes of it that you could rent. But as we were saying, these guys were definitely going for that Italian horror vibe. And you could see it in the lighting. You could see it in some of the, just like the quality of the special effects. They were heavily inspired by the gore effects of movies by Fulci and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They actually specifically were trying to recreate some of those. I'll talk about gore a bit later because that's the thing I like to do. But yeah, but the thing, and I think I'm going to bounce back and forth between this and my next topic a little bit, but this movie's interesting because while going for that Italian aesthetic, it still also very much felt like 90s slashers of the time. Did you guys kind of feel that? Like, oh, yeah. I was feeling Scream for sure in this.
Well, like, I think also, and I finally have like a way to describe it, it has like that reality TV show editing that's like so ingrained in like early 2000s movies and like late 90s movies. Like, it's like this weird thing where like there's like random cuts where like everything goes really fast for some reason. And like, I don't know, like there's just always like that vibe, I feel like, with like 1999 to like 2005-ish movies.
You've
where it's
talked
like,
about this a couple times.
It's
too,
just like this consistent like thing.
Yeah. But also like, so this for you, you have never lived in a world where you couldn't watch something that you heard about pretty much. You know what I mean? It's a different, like, doesn't that feel different to you? Like, you don't, like, I don't know. It's not a get off my lawn or old people telling young people things, but like, yeah, like for you, everything is available.
Yeah.
And it always has been.
And it makes like, honestly, like movie experiences harder in like a weird way. Cause I also feel like, at this point, I've seen so much that, like, when I watch movies where people are like, I loved this when it first came out or it scared the shit out of me, I'll, like, watch it and I'll be like, I don't want to be mean. It's just I've already seen this, basically, because so many things have, like, copied that or, like, replicated that where it's, like, hard. It's hard.
Yeah, you've seen it, like, honed. And what this did was, like, bring a couple of things that were maybe emerging together in one thing, which is cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's the thing I was going to comment on next was the small but emerging meta-horror film idea that was coming out in the 90s. So everybody knows Scream, obviously, is sort of the one that blew it out of the water. But before that, we had There's Nothing Out There. We had Wes Craven's first attempt at meta-horror with New Nightmare. And then I think there was a couple others. And then this, which is also very much doing that meta horror thing with the actress who has her series of bad slashers that they're kind of analyzing and just kind of the look and the feel of the slasher moments in this film. It feels very meta. So like we had that kind of commentary that I thought was coming through in the 90s right before we transitioned into some very different things like found footage.
Mm-hmm. Which this has a little. I mean, that's
porn,
half and
which
half.
This has a little too. Yeah. Although I would say this is more akin to Fulci than like your Hostels or your Saws. But then, yeah, we have all of this interesting lighting and some of the gore effects that are very much Italian. So it is interesting the way they kind of fuse these 90s ideas together with some of the Italian stuff.
Did you say you met a whore?
I met a whore.
Yeah, you met a whore.
Yeah. Here's one thing I wanted to bring up really quickly because I've seen a variety of perspectives on this. Some people think that the acting was shit and hated it. Some people found the acting effective while recognizing that it was kind of bad at times, but then commenting on how it kind of worked for this movie. What did you think about the acting?
I feel like it's also kind of a product of its time, like in that way with the acting style. But like, I thought the acting was like corny. Like, I don't know why. Like, I feel like there's a lot of corny acting everywhere, but also like peak 90s activities, corny acting, honestly. But I kind of liked it. Like, I guess I'm in the camp of I agree that, like, the bad acting didn't, like, I don't think it hurt the film.
No, it fit. I think it fit.
Yeah, like, it worked with it. Because, like, while there was, like, definitely serious stuff going on, and honestly, there were a couple of moments where I was just kind of like, ugh. Like, there was some good, like, gore stuff or, like, injury stuff where I was like, oh, my God, I hate that. Like, that's my nightmare. That's my nightmare. But I feel like everyone played the role they needed to in that movie. The only person that I just didn't like was Carl. like the
director.
The director guy, like he really like irked me. I was like, this man's acting irks me.
Because he wasn't supposed to be. So yeah, all of the, it works with the people who are the participants on the reality movie or show or whatever, because that's kind of what it's like, act natural. Well, no one really does. So I think it like gives you some leeway to have people not be great actors.
Yeah. I did think this is maybe a good pivot to talk about reality TV and whatnot, which was just kind of coming into existence in the 90s. But I thought this was an interesting critique of that. Mm-hmm. What did you think of this movie in the era that it came out and sort of skewering the Big Brother real world reality shows, which hadn't taken off in the way that we now understand them?
I have this quote from Nay Ebong, one of the writers. Young people would do anything to be famous, you know, and I just think it's sort of the jumping off point for that, which, again, this is a thing. You've never lived in a world where this wasn't happening.
Yeah.
Like, you were born in 2003 and all of this shit was just like part of the culture, right? That you could be a reality TV star or then an influencer, or you could like sell products on your Instagram or whatever.
It was like the turning point where like normal people could get fucking famous.
For doing nothing but be like, I have a nice personality and a nice ass.
Or like, Jersey Shore is peak that also. It's like normal ass, like just like trash people who I love desperately. Right.
So
being on TV.
It is a commentary on that though, for sure. Cause they're like archetypes. They're all the main characters are like archetypes and they're stupid and funny. And that's why I think the bad acting works too, is because it's like, this guy is the fucking comedian. This guy is, right. You know,
they're all like playing almost like, I don't know if it, like, I want to take it that far, if like that's like really the intention, but it was like parodying.
I think it was. Like, I don't know.
It felt like it was both unserious and serious at the same time, mm-hmm. where it was like kind of one of those like in a movie. What's that called? Like a, is it satirizing? Mm-hmm. Like, could that be it? Oh my God. New vocab.
Woo. What's the antonym of satire?
Oh yeah, tell me what the
I don't know what that would be either. Honestly,
just like straight.
we were learning about synonyms and antonyms earlier.
Yeah, I was quizzing everybody.
We passed.
Yeah, so the interesting kind of early commentary on reality TV. The Nay Ebong had another comment about kind of talking about young people doing anything to be famous. Just being themselves, but they end up being like a weird version of themselves or a fake version of themselves.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think that you kind of see that as the characters are first being introduced to the film. And then as shit starts to hit the fan, you get a better sense of who they really are. But the interesting thing, and multiple people have commented on this, they kind of band together and aren't as stupid as slasher characters generally are in your classic slasher. They're getting brutalized, but it's not because they're doing anything particularly stupid or making the wrong moves, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah, they kind of like strategize and do, you know, the thing I read was like, you're yelling at the TV, somebody should do insert whatever. And then the character's like, somebody should do insert whatever. And they sort of, it's not just like, let's split up and search the house or, you know,
it was like,
there's a little of that.
A very rare instance in a horror movie where I was not like, you stupid idiots are so dumb and I hate you.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we talked a little bit about the gore and shit in this, but let's talk a bit more about it because it's pretty good.
It's good.
And the directors did talk about how they wanted to kind of make this a centerpiece of the film, which is good old school horror filmmaking, I would say, especially coming out of the slasher era. But as I mentioned, we're not going to say who dies, but let's talk about how they die, because I think there's some really interesting techniques here. So the thing I noted was that every death scene had multiple components to it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like somebody gets hit with the meat cleaver. Somebody goes into the chainsaw. There's like an initial wound that is brutal and then like a follow-up kind of fatality, which is equally or more brutal for every one of these. So let's go through them one by one. So we have the kitchen scene, What do you guys think about the kitchen scene? It's kind of
booby trap.
Yeah, it's a booby trap.
It confused me greatly.
Where it came from.
Like, I kept replaying over and over again, trying to figure out, like, where it came what it was. And I was like, I still don't know exactly how that one happened. Like, how the first initial...
It was like things shot out from under the
sun. Yeah, they were almost like throwing stars.
Yeah. I didn't even get that. Like, it looked like a thermometer just burst. Like, I was like, what is
someone's
that?
Someone's body.
I'm so confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I saw that compared to stuff in Saw. I will admit I've never seen Saw and I never will.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I've only seen the newest one, I think, Saw 10.
On accident or something? Why? Just you were somewhere where it was playing?
Me and Dad were going to watch all of the Saw movies because we watched all of the Fast and Furious movies, which I have to say, I don't regret that at all. That was so fun.
You fell in love with that guy and then he died.
I did not fall. Walker. I was sad, actually, after he left. I had been hating on Paul for the last six movies, but now I am kind of sad.
And then life imitates art.
But anyway, I did see Saw 10 and they really they have their torture scenes down by that point.
Regular Saw, Wesley from Princess Bride is in it, right? Like, he's the guy?
Yeah.
Fuck, I just can't.
And Danny Glover.
He's in that?
Danny Glover?
Oh, that's weird.
Are you kidding? Yeah, I just hate torture, so I don't. But booby traps.
Yeah.
That's a Saw.
There's multiple booby traps.
Like 2000.
Okay, so this is before Saw.
Actually, no. Maybe it was a little earlier.
That's a good question.
We know Scream is before.
I feel like
Blair Witch is the same year.
It's either 1999 or 2000.
The first Saw came out in 2004.
Okay, so this is pre... Oh, and of course, that's you were my little baby at that time. I wasn't going to watch a fucking torture movie.
But I wasn't in it, being tortured.
But you were in my arms all the time when I was watching movies. I wasn't going to watch that shit.
I would have loved it. Yay!
Anyway, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so what else happens? Somebody gets covered in saran wrap.
Oh, yeah.
And then stuck to the ceiling somehow. That one's interesting.
That was wild.
Yeah, somebody gets their leg trapped in a bear trap type thing that shoots out of the wall and then picked up and impaled on some elk horns.
Yeah, and an antler kind of situation.
Somebody gets melted with acid
that
in a bathtub.
That one takes the cake.
Yeah.
And wait, I want to talk about that one a little bit.
2 weeks in a row, bathtub.
Really quickly because, first of all, the acid thing, I was like, oh my God, that really sucks, really bad. But the worst, my worst nightmare occurred when after, the acid thing, which has to do with mouths and teeth.
Oh, yeah.
That was there's something to me about it's really fingernails and teeth. Those are the two things that if you do that in a movie, I'm gonna lose it.
For me, it's not.
And I was I was holding my teeth the entire time because someone basically got curb stomped in a sense.
Oh,
and
God,
I was
the corner of a fucking counter. It's
that
awful.
That was a nightmare to me.
Yeah, that's the second component of this.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's
someone gets melted by acid in the bathtub.
And they get out of there.
But then, of course, that doesn't kill them. Mm-hmm. They get their mouth hole smashed against
the corner
of a cabinet. Yeah. So there's plenty of that kind of fun stuff for you to watch. There's something else that happens as well. But yeah.
Oh, the hanging guy. The hanging
guy. Yeah, the hanging guy who has obviously been sliced and diced a bit before he was
He was the only one we didn't
Yeah, we didn't see though. That.
We didn't see that thing happen.
Yeah, that thing didn't happen. We didn't spoil anything.
No, we didn't spoil
anything. That was fine.
Good work.
Yeah, good work, everyone. So stick around for the gore if that's your thing. I think what I want to do is just do a couple of random notes here. So Colobus, we get a titular line in this movie. I need a titular line theme song. Mm-hmm. Where they explain what Colobus means, and it's kind of funny. It's cheesy, but in a way that's easy to enjoy, I would say.
When you were brought in, there was a word that you kept repeating, Colobus. Does that ring a bell? Well, at the suggestion of a colleague, I looked it up. The word actually comes from an ancient Greek term. term, which when distilled into 90s lingo basically means mutilated.
The making of this, which we watched on the Blu-ray, got me kind of nerding out just because this was a low-budget film. They shot it in Omaha, Nebraska for $500,000. And I think they did a pretty dang good job for that low of a budget, mm-hmm. even in the 90s. But I was just nerding out about watching them try to do all this creative stuff with such limited means. Just kind of took me back to being like a young film obsessed nerd who was like, how did they do that stuff with no money? I thought that was kind of cool.
They shot it in 18 days.
18 days. That's on 35 millimeter.
Yeah. And they like borrowed their friend's parents' house as the location, which explains why, you know, it has that like real world element where all the kids go and they're like, oh, my God, it's amazing. Because there's like a table that's a fish tank. But then it's also like Cody was saying, it's like, but then it's also like there's a room with like a twin bed with a white, you know, a quilt and like a white wood frame, mm-hmm. like, and yeah, they're your aunt's out. Guest room.
They're, like,
you know?
Flipping out, like, this has beds and shit.
Because right. in the real world, that's what they do. They place. Choose their room and, like, oh, my God, this room has, like, a full-size volleyball court in the, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's all, like, so it had, like, a little of that mixed with, yeah, but there's, like, a fish tank table, which the that's pretty.
I did not peep yeah, that. Cool. That's funny.
Oh, really?
I did not peep the fish tank table.
They show it multiple times, but, yeah, yeah. it's definitely, like, that's some budget stuff that it's like, this is the luxury house we're going to set you up in. And it's yeah. like, but it's just.
And like, they used all the shit that was there. It's not like yeah. they furnished it. It was just
no.
like, whoever
they probably
lived
brought
there,
in some of the things. Yeah, but yeah.
They
probably
did. They like trashed some shit.
For sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, what I want to do before we get into what we liked and didn't like and whatnot is try to talk about the ending without spoiling it. But I did kind of want to talk about the stylistic pivot that happens at the end. So we get this film that's clearly inspired by giallos and Argento, but also feels like a 90s slasher. But as things kind of wind down, we get to this sort of very dreamy end sequence that feels very Italian.
Yeah.
I have a comment that will tie this together without spoiling anything, I think, which we've kind of glossed over that we do have a main character-ish, right? Kira?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Kira is kind of our main character.
And a side point, again, I promise not to go off about boobs, is that the actress who played Kira, Amy Weber, was a WWE wrestling valet, which means she was the second to a dude when he was wrestling. But that's neither here nor there. She is kind of the main character. We see her in the hospital. We see like surgeons around her, you know, from her perspective, which is kind of a cool shot. And we kind of get dragged into a, is she crazy or are things really happening? Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Yeah.
Plot, which I don't think we really touched on. And I think yeah. that's really important. And it's kind of a good way to not spoil things, but also say it goes to like kind of a dreamlike thing. And it's because Kira's mind is sort of central to what's happening in this movie, right?
Yeah, no, that's a great way to explain it. And that really sort of underpins this pivot to the sort of
yeah.
the dreamlike mm-hmm. Italian weirdness, kind of confusing. Even the acting starts to feel like an Italian film at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it all kind of does revolve around what or what not is happening in Kira's mind versus the real world.
Mm-hmm. I think that some of the like cooler kind of intense moments come from that element of like not knowing if this is real.
Right.
Or
and
what's
her
going
art
on.
Too. Her art is
or like
pivotal.
Some of the like, because there are clear moments where you know she's hallucinating or like something's occurring, and then there's moments where you're like, wait, is this real or not? And I think like some of her hallucinations are like super interesting. Like I'm very like interested in like what was going on like with that, and I don't want to like say what they were because I think they're like kind of cool and freaky. It's like a little bit, you know, anytime I feel like any movie deals with like mental health issues, it's like kind of misrepresented, because also like in the context of horror films, a lot of times like people who are mentally ill are like usually the villain,
right.
or the person in the wrong, and it's like kind of hard to like, you know, accurately display something like that when like the vibe is kind of like satire anyway, or like the whole vibe of the movie is like, it's serious, but not exactly. But I think like for a 90s movie, they did like an okay job of not like taking things too far in general. Like there wasn't like a lot of like weird gay jokes or like weird fucked up jokes about people, yeah. Which I was like kind of like, okay.
There was an interesting thing at the beginning when this, you know, the guy that's kind of like anti-woke comic has sort of like a, I don't want to like mess around with this cross dresser or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels almost like a slight against him. You know, it doesn't feel like here's like a bad like trans or gay joke or something. It's like, oh, this guy's a piece of shit.
Literally.
Well, he's performing at like some event for like the Society for the Empowerment of Women or something too. Yeah. So it's definitely all pretty like, it's a wink and a nod.
It's making fun of him. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. That's a good way, I think, to like, to box it in. Like, yeah. There's some, did it happen? Did it not happen? What's happening? That's, yeah. No spoiling.
Yeah, I think so. One last interesting filmmaking note, and we learned this from watching special features again, which is something I want to maybe start doing when I have time. Because you learn things from them.
You sure do.
They put this movie together. They were all excited about finishing it, and it came in at like 64 minutes long or something. And they were like, oh shit, that's not long enough for a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to go shoot some additional footage, which was actually stuff they put together as a potential sequel, but then ended up sort of being a wraparound story for this film to fill it out. So I feel like you can sense that a bit in the movie, but maybe not if you didn't know that. So if you're listening to this and you haven't watched it yet, that might have ruined a little bit of the feeling. But keep your eye out for that.
Also, in an article I read that I think also turned out to be in the special features, they were talking about how they were prepared to do a sequel. And then, as we were saying, same year as this movie came out, Blair Witch Project came out. And that was one of the things they kind of blame for not getting sequels, is that the entire landscape of horror movies changed after that movie.
Yeah, like blew it to pieces. And like the sort of 90s slashers that were trying to make a comeback were basically like,
yeah, like, oh, we could do different things instead. And
yeah, they seemed bitter about it.
They did seem quite bitter about it. Like, I feel like one of the guys wouldn't even say the name. Like, he was like, and you know what came out? People running through the woods and shit. It was kind of funny.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get into our thoughts and feelings.
Oh,
anybody
yeah.
want to go first? You've been picking at your knee for a while. Did you get something out of there?
Something happened. Oh, did you get it out?
Okay. I have had, my thoughts and feelings are, I've had this sliver in my knee. I want you guys, I'm going to pass it around.
No, I don't want to
touch
it.
I want to see it.
No, this is what was in my knee.
Give me it.
Dude.
Give me it. I want to. Give me it. Whoa.
It's not small.
This, yeah, like for the listeners, it's like
about an inch long.
It really is like a long little stick.
The dog wants to eat it.
Albert is
feeding
him
my knee stick.
Here, do you want the knee stick? Oh, it's gone. I lost it.
Oh my God.
I lost your knee
stick.
We've
completely gone off the rails because of your weird
knee. I'm sorry,
knee
but
work.
I finally Whoa. Got
this
it.
This was in my mom's knee.
Well, that is body horror.
Yeah. Okay, you want to go first since you're the knee picker?
I'm sorry that I picked my knee on the radio, but everyone's been telling me I need to get that out of there.
All right, and it's true. I'm glad you did.
I liked this movie. I felt like it was kind of all over the place, but it luckily had the right tools in place to make that look like it was supposed to be, like different kinds of footage and, you know, different styles together, because it was like we're making a show, a movie. I found it a little confusing at points, but not in a way that made me mad, just in a way where I was like, am I stupid? Which I am. And I just took a stick out of my knee and maybe I'll be smart now. That's what I got.
All right.
Per mom. I feel like the same way about like wondering if I'm dumb or not, because there were like certain shots where I was like, I actually don't know what happened. Like, I really don't understand like the mechanics of this. It was mainly the kitchen thing. Like, I'm still stuck on that,
just
because
the trap,
that shit really confused me, and I like watched it like 10 times because I was like, what even happened? And I still don't get it. Fair I really enough. don't I don't get it.
There was a booby trap under the kitchen sink and it
boobs,
shot her.
Bruh.
No, booby trap, booby trap, booby trap.
You went boobs.
Booby trap.
Say it again.
Well, there were boobs involved in that booby trap.
There were.
Okay, right, but still.
Well, okay, back to what I was saying. Boobs. Anyway, I liked the deaths in the movie. I thought I just love when any movie at any time uses like practical effects. Is that right? Or special effects?
Yeah, yeah.
Practical effects? Like, I really like that. I love, like, I want it to be like you built this crazy gore thing on someone's face with, like, wax and shit. Like, I'm really into that. It's my favorite, like, look in a horror movie. I don't want, like, the fake CGI. Like, I feel like an elderly curmudgeon in that way where, like, I get mad. Because I'm like, bruh, it also takes me out of it just thinking, like, this person's, like, in a green screen, like, green outfit right now, probably.
Right, with, like, shit attached to their head.
And I, like, how is this even serious? Like, it makes me think, too, like, actors really have to be good if they're gonna, like, be, like, real. Like, because that's, like, crazy. Anyway, not the point. I'm so sorry. I liked the lighting. It was kind
that's
of...
That's my child.
I liked the lighting too. Like, sometimes lighting can like make me mad when it looks grimy, but I kind of feel like it fit this movie. There was like a interesting like yellow tone to the movie that
like
I
pee-pee.
Like not like pee-pee, but like I don't know, like kind of when like some like chain smoker smokes all the time and their walls are like that brown yellow color. Mm-hmm. Like that was the vibe, but I feel like it kind of worked with the movie. So I liked that. I feel like there wasn't anyone in the movie that I like actually hated in terms of characters. I was kind of like, I'm rooting for these guys. I honestly want them to get out of here. I don't want them to die. They don't deserve this. And yeah, I liked it. I feel like it was kind of creative too, again, with like what little budget it had and like what little time they had. So I appreciated that.
Hell yeah. I thought this was a fun rewatch for me because I kind of completely wiped out what kind of movie this was from my memory. And so going into it was a surprise because I was like, oh, this is not anything like I remembered it because I was thinking of another movie. But I really did like it stylistically. I loved the combination of the homage to Italian cinema and the kind of weird contrast with the 90s slasher vibe that was going on. However, I think, you know, if this came out in the last 10 years, I'd probably be much more critical, but it's because people have access to more films. You can watch so many things easy that, you know, every time I see an homage to something, I'm like, whatever, you know, which is just me being an old fucking stick in the mud, I guess. But, you know, the fact that it came out in the 90s is notable. And I think it was trying to do something commendable there, trying to pay honor to filmmakers that these guys were really into. So I thought that's cool. I really did think it was interesting that, you know, slashers were starting to die out in the 90s, even after Scream kind of resurrected it. By the end of the 90s, we had so many like teen slasher kind of things that this almost feels like the last gasp before that next phase of American horror cinema. So I do think this is kind of an interesting last little bit of 90s slashers that I think a lot of people missed on the first watch. But no, stylistically, I thought it was fun. I didn't even care if they were ripping off the Goblin music. And I thought there was enough about it that it's definitely worth a watch. Even if you just want to watch something dumb, I think it hits that bill, but it can also be smart, like you guys were saying. Like, sometimes some of the like weird dreamy Italian stuff makes you feel stupid, but I think that's just the context of having that in a 90s film where you're like expecting to be spoon-fed, whereas if you were just watching a Fulci film, you just kind of have to dial it in and be like, all right, I'm not going to know what the fuck's going on. I'm just going to have to ride the vibe. Yeah,
the people making it don't know what's going on.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just about boobs and violence.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they did that too. So the boob thing is a callback.
This is a Roman Empire, bruh.
I'm sorry, it's just the stick in my leg speaking.
That's okay.
It's gone now.
Okay, let's do a quick obscurity rating on this thing. It's got 2,700 IMDb votes, 40 critic reviews on the IMDb, 5 Rotten Tomato reviews, which I'm kind of surprised about because it seemed like the Blu-ray release in 2018 was kind of a big deal, but apparently not that big of a deal. And you can currently watch it on streaming at 6 places at the very least, as well as those DVDs and Blu-rays I mentioned earlier. All in all, in our little horror rubric, we got a 5.5, which I think is the same as the last movie.
Yeah, it's pretty like middling, fair to middling.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if we had reviewed this in 2017, it would probably score a lot higher. But after that Blu-ray came out, and this has gained a bit of a cult following over the years, I think more people are discovering it and it's becoming less obscure than it was. All right. Do you want to do das thing that dare do? This is the thing we do, where we pull down our pants and we do a little weird circle dance.
What?
And we wave our hands in the air.
Sure, you guys can't see, but every time we vote, that's what we do.
This sounds like a sexual abuse.
It's not.
He pulls down his pants?
Why are you looking at me, bro?
It was part of the little circle dance.
Do a little dance. Got it. Yeah. Got it. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God damn.
You might want to cut that. I'm sorry. There was a stick in my knee.
Using that excuse.
Yeah. All right. We're going to count to 3. We're keeping our pants on. And
yeah,
then we are going to do a thumbs up or a thumbs down, whether we like this.
Fuck, I can't decide.
And whether we think it's a gem
so
or not.
Conflicted.
Okay, here we go.
Mic's up.
3, 2, 1.
Oh!
Look at this. I didn't expect this. I had no idea what to expect. But report out on our voting. We had 3 thumbs up for this gun. This gun of a son. Oh boy.
Girl, you laughing too hard.
I'm sorry, just for this gun.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess we think this is a gem. It's maybe not as hidden of a gem as it used to be, but at one point it most certainly was. And I'm glad that people are rediscovering it. And I think that you should rediscover it as well. Okay, what else do we got to talk about tonight? We don't have anything to talk about other than the next movie will be selected by Buggy. Have you selected a movie?
No. To give a clue, though, like a hint, I'm looking for potential Western horror gems.
Oh, boy. I was researching.
It has been hard because the only ones that are good, everyone knows
about.
So yep. I'm like this really working overtime to try to find one.
Could we just watch Tremors?
Well, no. There was one I was looking at. This is not the one that's called like And God Said to Cain. That's supposed to be like a famous Western horror movie, but it's a spaghetti Western.
Okay.
I was looking at it, but I watched part of it and it was just like not fitting the bill.
This is an interesting direction.
Yeah, I know. I was, you mentioned this to me the other day and I was kind of looking through and I was like, damn, even the ones that I thought were kind of obscure don't even meet our criteria.
Like the one you talked about, like every single, like
Dead Birds.
Every single list. Yeah.
There's another one called The Burrowers that is also a horror Western, but everybody's seen that too.
Everyone's seen that as well.
Obviously, I wouldn't say this is quite a Western, but we rewatched Ravenous from 1999.
That was on a lot of them too.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And I gotta say, if you've never seen Ravenous, you should check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming a horror gem, oddly enough. I think it has become forgotten. And I don't understand why, but it is hella fun and the tone is so weird. Check out Ravenous. But yeah, I am totally into this Western idea.
I'm trying to see if I can find one.
I bet you can if you really just like...
That's why I watched Cannibal the Musical last night and it was bad.
It might, like you might find... Well, usually like when we pick one, we don't pre-watch it. So it might suck. You might find a turn.
But I'm really like another goal of mine is I'm trying to find a gem. But like a gem where it's like, this movie's so good.
I want to watch one of my picks that are just so bad. But the thing is, I don't want to do it on purpose. Cause I think it's really easy to pick a movie that's shitty on purpose.
Yeah, you're like, I know this is going to be bad because I saw the cover and I saw that everyone in it was like a high school teacher or a porn star or something.
I would like to pick one that I'm excited about, and then it's just terrible. That would be fun. Okay, that's that. We got a potential horror western coming up, yet to be selected.
I like it.
We watched Colobus, which I'm sure I'll find a way to put a clip in there somewhere that you probably already heard by now that explains what Colobus means.
And, oh, yeah, fuck.
Oh, yeah, fuck.
Uh-huh.
Boobs.
And boobs.
Hey, I would like to apologize for my behavior. I had a stick in my leg.
Can you stop? I'm going to put it back in your leg.
I'm sorry, it was controlling me. I'm going to be totally different tomorrow, you guys.
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt. ¶¶